at a point where the Ramchal finds himself actually at this time in Amsterdam. It was after Ramchal saw that Italy is no longer a place for him to be able to survive by any means. From all the Radifis and all the Soros and all the trouble of the Misnagdim, though they were against him. So he goes to Amsterdam, and B'chari Hashem, it was like Shlech Dechateva, that Amsterdam was not misspoiled. And not misspoiled at all, he says, from all the Lashon Hara and all the bad press that was against the Ramchal. And not only they disregarded it, but they were mechabed him b'kovet gadol. And they gave him all the kovet as they do in order to get true Adam gadol. Now, we had mentioned that on the way to Amsterdam that Ramchal had a mishap. And that is because he had stopped in Frankfurt. Again, we're talking about 1735. And in Frankfurt, which was on the way, again, had a great Adam gadol. It was a gadol ador. His name was again named by Rabbi Yankiv Katz, mentioned a number of times. Now, Katz was not only the Av Bezdin, was not only the Rav of Frankfurt, he was also a yeshiva of Frankfurt. We mentioned that in those days, had yeshiva 400 Talmidim. 400 Talmidim was an enormous type of yeshiva, because the mode of travel is not like today. You just take a bus or something like that. And for one's fame to be strong enough to attract Talmidim in those days to come Davke to Frankfurt, which is 400 Talmidim, because his reputation preceded him. So they mentioned again Yankiv Katz, who was a Gadol Ador, and he wrote the Shas Teshuvas Shev Yaakov. And just mention again, he passed away in 1740 and was succeeded by the Pnei Yeshua. So we can see who we're talking about. We also mentioned that the Pnei Yeshua is one of those who actually asked Shilas from Rabbi Yankiv Katz, because in the Shal Teshuvah Shev Yankiv, you see how he writes Teshuvah. He said many times, you want to know the greatness of an Adam God, to see who asked him Shilas. Well, the Pnei Yeshua asked Shilas, he asked the Shev Yankiv, as you see. And interesting, we said that the Shev Yankiv, when he was Nifter, that the Pnei Yeshua succeeded him. But when you're going back to the Nikud is like this, so the Rabbi Yankiv Katz was also one of the very fiercest and strong opponents. He had only heard of Ramchal, he had never met him before. Now he meets him the first time, and Ramchal felt confident that if he'll meet him face to face, he'll recognize the truth, he'll see the emes, he'll see that all the things that were written about him, that actually they are lies, they are not true, they are fabrications. But he was not successful, they didn't even give him a chance. And they came to the point where Rabbi Yankiv Katz and his bezin, that they pushed Ramchal against the wall, and they wrote up a text of a document stating where Ramchal would be forced to admit that everything that he claimed to be, it was all false, it was just a game, and it was child's play, and so on and so forth, to deny anything that is really truth about him, and in other words, to acquiesce and to agree, bowing his head down and acceding to the request of his misnagdim, because otherwise they threatened that they would imprison him, they had power at the time, and the rest of his life would be over. He saw, you know, he was between a rock and a hard place, and he didn't have much of a choice, and he made the decision, whatever it is, he's going to sign, even though it's totally, it's false, it's clear like he's admitting that he was an imposter, that was with details. He figured his life is over. He has to get out of here. Whatever it takes, that's got out of here. And he did sign the document. In other words, stating, yes, it's true that whatever I did, what I claimed that I had the Magid and my greatness in Kabbalah was false and so on and so forth. Clearly destroying him and admitting to everything that he was being accused of until now. Ad kan, this point. He signed it, they let him go, and he goes to Amsterdam. And as we said, in Amsterdam he was received the Kovet Gadol. So we said, this is Lamala B'Dechateva, this is against the natural thing, of order of things, but this is what happened, because Baruch HaLamayisah said, no, Atkan, till now. Now the Ramchal is going to find a safe haven, in a place that he is really recognized, respected for, in fact, for what he is. In the meantime, as we said, they still attempted, his enemy still attempted even to discredit him, even when he was already in Amsterdam. And mainly we said it was the rabbis of Venice, we said, the many, many rabbis of Venice, like a conclave there, and they all began again trying to write letters to Amsterdam to throw him out. What are you holding, harboring such a person? Does not deserve to be kept, does not deserve to be supported, and so on and so forth. At the same time, what they did was, and this was, as we say, you know, the clincher, what they did was they sent a copy of the signed letter, Ramchal signed, to his own Rebbe. Rebbe who always stood by his side. Rebbe who believed in him, Rav Shaya Basam. The Rebbe who always defended him, no matter anything that was said, he says, I know him. He said, I raised him up like my own child. And everything that's being said about him is false. He's a great man, he's a holy man. And here comes now, there's a letter signed black and white by the Ramchal admitting that everything that the accuser said is true. It's 100% true. One can imagine that his Rebbe had tremendous pain by that. And you could not be consoled. Would not be able to be consoled because this is being used to tease him by all those who was against Ramchal. Oh, look who you supported till now. We told you so. There's no one. And now here finally he admitted it. Your own Talmud, Ramchal, he admitted the truth. And he didn't really have any sort of some logical or way to be able to be doiched their tainus and push off whatever they're saying. In other words, what am I going to answer them? How am I going to answer them? So the only thing he does is, well, I'm going to write a letter to Ramchal, my Talmud. I'm going to write a letter. And it was not just Tama letter, he really rebukes him harshly. Very sharp letter. That his own Rebbe now was the only one that really went, that stood by his side. So he writes and he gives and he says, how could you do such a thing? How could you do such a thing? He called it, referring to the Maisa Neure. It's an awesome act. Something like that. He says, the terrifying thing that you went ahead and you signed on this document. And he says, either way he says, it's not good. If it's a lie, then why did you sign on it? And if it's true, so you fooled me. You fooled the whole world. You allowed the entire country and countries to be stirred up because of this controversy which dragged into it, you know, sides, rabbis on this side, rabbanim on this side, and so on. How did you allow it to happen? So either way, if it's false, why'd you sign on it? And if it's true, who knows what's worse? Ramchal goes on and he says to him, listen, it's hard for me to believe that they really forced me to do something like that, to sign on something. He says, I want you to know, it's absolutely not true. Even though I signed, it's absolutely not true. But you can ask me if it's not true, if it's sheker, why did I sign? I said, well, I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to throw the question to you. But he didn't want to say the question to his Rebbe. He says, if someone goes over to a fellow, he goes over to a fellow, to a neighbor, to an acquaintance, and says to him like this, points a gun to his head, he says, I give you two choices. I want you to sign on this document, you're a mamzer. It's not true. If you don't sign, he says, I'll blow your head off. What's the person going to do? He's going to allow himself better. He has no choice. What he's going to do is, first thing is survival. That's the first thing. He's going to sign it. Well, this is actually exactly the type of situation that I found myself in. And therefore, given the two choices, he said, I have no other choice. He said, I had to sign. But I can tell you 100% that I merely played along with him. He says, and it just shows that they were so desperate, he says, they're so desperate to do something to be able to destroy me, that what they made, finally they pressured me to a point that I should sign on something which is absolutely not true. And they knew that I didn't believe in what I'm signing. It shows how lowly, he says, that they had fallen in order to be able to get the results that they want to, result. At the same time, he says, Baruch Hashem, he says, now I'm in Amsterdam. He lets Rebbe know that Bechaz Hashem, that the good grace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's sitting there in Amsterdam, B'Kovet Godel. All of them, he says, Amamish Mechavet him, they love him, they give him tremendous Kovet, in spite of all the Lashon Hara, because Baruch Hu somehow did not allow them to absorb all that Lashon Hara. As a matter of fact, he even appointed him to be the Rosh Yeshiva there in Amsterdam. And even, he says, what's called idle talk, everything I say, they see and they find a lesson. Even if it's not Dafkin learning, any Sichas Chum, common talk. The Gemara says, Sichas Chum, Shul Tamil Chachomim, the Gemara says, Chofal and Sukkah, needs Sichas Limud, needs Limud. They respect everything that I say, as mundane as it might appear. No, they're trying to figure out to see what redeeming value there is in my words. Everything is choshev. Mamish, she says, they appreciate whatever I say, like the wisdom of Shlomo HaMelech. This emotionally writes in letters to Ramchal. Mommy's like Shlomo, like the tables have overturned completely now in Amsterdam. And he goes on to say that all the Talmidei Chachomim, the great scholars of Amsterdam, they come to my house and they come around whenever they have time, and all they want is to hear Divrei Torah from me. They want to learn from me. And he continues in his letter clearly to depict and to point out to his Rebbe, he says, the great chesed and finally what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did with him. His Rebbe received a letter and he accepted it. He accepted the answer. He accepted that now because he didn't know what to make of it. He sees the letter that Ramchal signed, that he admits to all the accusations. Now Ramchal said he had no choice. It's either they cut his head off, he says, or sign on the document. He had no choice. He had to sign on the document. So he calmed down, but the Misnagdim still didn't calm down. The opposition still didn't calm down. But they continued to try to stir up the world. As a matter of fact, they succeeded to have German rabbis to put Ramchal in Cheren, and some of the Polish rabbonim to put him in Cheren. But at the end of the day, Amsterdam ignored it all. They said, I don't care what they say. Say, we are independent, we are autonomous, and therefore we have all our own scholars, we have our own rabbonim, and we're not interested in what German rabbis are saying, we're not interested in what the Polish rabbis are saying. He says, we see what we have here, we appreciate what we have here, and they recognize the great man that we have here. And little by little, the name of the Ramchal began really truly to emerge, that he's an Odom Godol Miyod, he's a tremendously great man, both in Nigla, in this, in all aspects of Torah. It doesn't make a difference in the revealed portion and the hidden portions of Torah. And at the end of the day, Poland also, the rabbis of Poland stood to his side, and quite a number of other rabbis also continued little by little. We see the opposition, the weakening, the koyach, the power of the opposition began to weaken. And there was a great Baal Mechubal. A great Baal Mechubal we had mentioned in a number of weeks ago, could be even a number of months ago, by the name of Rav Aviad Tzar Shalom. Rav Aviad Tzar Shalom was a great Mechubal. This person, Rav Aviad Tzar Shalom, actually was born in Italy in 1680. And this Aviad Tzar Shalom was a friend of Baal Mechubal. He was a Chavar, a colleague, someone we mentioned a number of times, Rav Yitzchak Lampunti, with the author of the Pachad Yitzchak in Ferrara. We were there in the Beis Chaim of Ferrara, but we mentioned there are no matzevas there, because when he was nifter in the 1700s, by decree of the Pope, no Jewish man who dies, even a rabbi, cannot have a tombstone. So it's not very clear to this day, even though the old ancient Beis Chaim is still around, but it's not clear to pinpoint exactly where the caver of this person is or that person is. But you know that you are now in the vicinity, you are now in the area of the Beis Chaim. We mentioned Mr. Lampunti was a genius, besides being an outstanding physician, which was very common for Italian rabbis to be. Outstanding, truly. But again, he was a tremendous Rosh Yeshiva, and he wrote encyclopedic work, some like 12 volumes or so. You know, no computers at the time. It's just amazing, amazing. If just anybody goes look at that safer, the many volumes. It was a Pachad Yitzchak, what it's called. So Rav Aviad Tzar Shalom was a colleague of the Pachad Yitzchak and a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda Brill. Rabbi Brill was a Godel Hador, a tremendous fighter against anything of Shabbos. He looks sort of like a Rabbi Yankiv Emden, but he was earlier, a little earlier. So the Rabbi Yehuda Brill. And all of those we're talking about is in Mantova in Italy. So we happened to find whatever is left. There's no real Beis Chaim to visit in Mantova because, well, you're right, there's an army base over there, but the truth is it's closed off. But we found a sign of the ancient Beis Chaim, of the various great Balam Ukubalam that are buried there, among them the Ramah Mupanu, Rav Moshe Zakus, and so on. And we know Rav Yehuda Brill is also buried there, because he's also buried in Mantova, and other great people. And Rav Aviad Tzar Shalom is also buried there. He writes in a place, he says, I studied all disciplines. He was a mathematician, he was an astronomer, everything. But all disciplines, he says, I was able to master, he says, in 10 years. From the time I started to study Talmud from my youth until my old age, I barely scratched the surface. He tries to point out the vast difference. He says, in secular wisdom, he says, in the wisdom that you find in the Torah. So he was a great Baal Mechubal. Actually, he started learning Kabbalah only at the age of 42, And he became a tremendous, tremendous master of Kabbalah. And he recognized the greatness of the Ramchal in Kabbalah. And he supported him very, very strongly. As a matter of fact, even if he had questions in Kabbalah, he would ask the Ramchal. The Ramchal should explain it to him. In any case, what he said was, he made an interesting comment. We have spoken in the past about the Yehuda Ari of Modena. The Ari of Modena was one of the great rabbis of Venice, right, in the early 1600s. And he was a very controversial rabbi because, as we said, he had jack of all trades, about 22 different type of professions. He was a publisher, he was a teacher, he was a baldash, he was an orator. Yes, he knew how to dance, he knew how to sing, he knew how to write poetry. Unfortunately, his weakness was gambling, which he himself admitted. A great man, he admits his weaknesses. He said it became sort of an addiction. Part of the reason started because he had 22 different professions, because he was knowledgeable on so many things, and did not make one parnosa from all the 22 professions. Nothing brought him, couldn't make a living. Did not make a living. And maybe gambling, you know. Who knows? Maybe he said, might as well work his way. But it just didn't. And just one thing just led into another. And he writes about it very clearly. He says, I have to be careful not to get involved in such things. But Yerari Mumudina was very much against Kabbalah. And he wrote a very strong sefer called Ari Noyam, the Roar of the Lion, because the name is Aryeh. So the name of the sefer is the Roar of the Lion, Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh, against Kabbalah. Ramchal wrote a counter sefer, clearly. A counter sefer clearly to destroy all the arguments of Judaism and Medinim and to show again the authenticity of Kabbalah. So Ravi Atzar Shalom says, look, the Ramchal, everybody is going against him to try to destroy him and all the fabrications, all the lies. What did Ramchal really do that was really wrong? Rabbi Aryeh, who went ahead and wrote a sefer against Kabbalah, and he wrote that the whole Zohar is false. Ad kedei kach, can you say such a thing? And nobody opposed him. So Rabbi Aryeh, there would be a reason to oppose him, and to let him live b'sholem. And here you have Ramchal, he says, where he was at the other end of this, clearly having all the strong opposition and really to destroying that person. So again, it's a reviad, and this is, so little by little, as we're saying, is it began to die down, and as we say, the light of Ramchal, this was the beginning to shine, and of course to this day it shines. More to be continued in Amsterdam on the way to Eretz Yisrael, Mitzvah Hashem, as we go on further. So we go now in the Sefer Derech Hashem. It's Daf Mem Vov, in the edition that you have on the bottom. Daf Mem Vov on the bottom. Begins like Ois Tes. Ois Tes V'omnom, that's the beginning of the words. Ramchal pointed out, of course, and everything in all the paragraphs that lead up that, because God created mankind in this world. The ultimate achievement in this world is for a person to be able to do the right thing, to be able to come close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. The closer that you come to Kadosh Baruch Hu, you are achieving all the more the purpose of being here in this world. Now, of all the different ways Ramchal says, because every time you do a mitzvah sanctifies you, you become more kedushadik, you become more holy, and of course, as such, you become closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. But of all the different methods of doing any type of a mitzvah that can bring you closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's one top method that outstands all of the different methods, that a person succeeds in that, and he will come closer than any other method to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And Ramchal goes on to design and to explain the following. The Omnom, however, he says, Emsoy Echad, there is one method that Nosa Nono Akeli is Baruch Shemoy. There is one method that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave mankind, Shemadregosoy Lamale Mikol Shahu Emsoyim. The level of this particular Matona, right, is above all the other methods that are able to bring a man closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. HaMekarvim Odom Elof, that can draw an individual closer to Hashem. And what is that? Talmud Torah, learning Torah. So every mitzvah, right? Every mitzvah makes a tremendous impression on a person's neshama. Every mitzvah, we have no isogia, we have no idea. You know, the tremendous influence that a mitzvah has. Any mitzvah, even one single mitzvah. Now go ahead, says Ramchal, and he says, more than any mitzvah, what a mitzvah could achieve, in terms of bringing a person, attracting him, and drawing him closer to Hashem, the greatest of all that have this ability is the study of Torah. Nothing can compare, he says, to the power of studying a Torah. But you know Ramchal used a lashon in the beginning. He uses Nosa Lono, Hashem gave us. Gave us means to say is, it's not just that he made it available, but he gave it to us. Hashem gave it to us from above, which means it's really a gift. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a gift. And matter of fact, this is something that we enunciate when a person has an aliyah, right, he makes the bracha before. So he says at the end, he says, Baruch Atah Hashem, Noisei Na Torah. Noisei, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave. Not just made it available, but Noisei Na Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to us as a gift. As a matter of fact, you realize, we should just say this on the side, that there are two brachas that a person makes when you have an aliyah to the Torah. Well, the first bracha is, Asher b'chavonu mikol amin, right, that you chose us among all the nations. We thank Hashem, we bless Hashem that you gave us. And also, Amonu, because bracha, you gave us the Torah. Then after the reading, you make a second bracha. And that bracha is, again, you bless Hashem, b'chato Hashem, Asher nosa amonu Torah semes, that you gave us a true Torah. You gave us a true Torah. And we thank Hashem for that. What's the need of the two brachas? And one is before the laning, one before the kri, and one is after. What is one before and what is one after? And what is the difference really between the two? So many, many years ago, we had here Reb Simcha Wasserman, Zechon Abracha, the son of the great Goyen, the Tzaddik, Reb Chonah Wasserman. And Simcha Wasserman said very succinctly, and very aptly, and very appropriately, he gave the following marshal, very beautifully. He says, you know, if a friend of yours, you know, gives you a package, a gift, you know, so you open it up, you can see that it's something that's almost worthless, which is very, or at least it's worth very little. You're not going to really appreciate what he gave you. And if look, out of courtesy, you'll say thank you, but it'll be a small thank you. If a friend of yours, an acquaintance, gives you something that's really valuable, what you can imagine, then you're going to thank him with great enthusiasm. Because the thank you or the appreciation goes according to the value of the gift. But let's assume that it's not a friend or an acquaintance giving you a gift. Assuming that the king of the country that you're living in, he sends you a gift, a package. It's not important, the value, even if it's only a card, $2, $5. It's tremendous excitement. Why? Because the value of the gift is not measured by the item, it's by who gave it to you. By who gave it to you? If the king gives you something, so the chashivas and the importance is by through the giver who gave it to you. Now can you imagine that when a king sends you something and you open it up, it not only came from the king, but it's $1 million. So now the excitement is even double. Because it came from a king, even it wouldn't be worth all that much. And look what he gave me. He gave me something that's tremendous, tremendous value. So Simcha Wasserman says something beautifully. Before a person reads the Torah, right? You didn't read it yet. You don't really know what you have. You're called up to the Torah. You didn't read it yet. So he said to Kodesh Baruch Hu, I thank you. Asher b'chavonu mikol amim. I thank you that you chose us to give the gift. You know, it comes from you. Hashem gave us. So now you open up the package, we read the Torah, and we see it's $1 million. You pick up the phone again, you give a second thank you. The first thank you wasn't enough. Because now I really see, after the reading, you recognize the tremendous chashivis of what the matana, what Hashem gave us. So now that's the second. Now it's a totally different type of thank you. This is now because of the chayfetz, because of the object that we're zeichet to have. So in any case, Ramchal says that this method, the method that Hashem gave us, the gift, He gave us the Torah, that Hashem gave us the Torah, so this is something which is above anything that's able to bring us close to Hashem. And he points out, and in learning Torah, there's also two types of levels. Not everybody masters two levels, but there are two levels in terms of learning Torah, and both levels achieve tremendously. Both levels in Talmud Torah and Limud Torah achieve amazingly. And he goes on to say, Ho'achas, he says, one is even learning Torah on a simple level, which means, Ho'achas, the first level, Bibchinas Hahigoyen Vahalimud. It means from the perspective of saying the words. Right? Saying the words and studying the text. Saying the words and studying the text. Which means to say, and we're going to show you soon, actually from halachic standpoint, that Ramchal takes on the position of those poskim that hold that when you're learning Torah Shebichtav, you're learning Chumash, no, the written law, the written word. Chumash, Tanakh, right? Torah Nevi'im Ksivim, that even if a person doesn't understand even the meaning of the words, just saying the holy words is tremendous. You get tremendous points in Shemaim just for saying the words alone. Just for saying the words alone. In other words, Ramchal is not talking about cognitive understanding at this point. You have no idea what it means just to say the words. So if a person says Tehillim, yeah? We don't know all the words of here sometimes, unless you have English translation on the side and you take the time to look. So there are many words in Tehillim that are quite difficult. Even if somebody's a master in Lashon Kodesh, maybe still don't know what to translate all the words. But the fact that you have said these words, it has tremendous, tremendous effect. That's the first level. That's the first level. Vashniya, the second level, is Bebchinas HaHaskola. That's the perspective of understanding. That's another level. Not just saying words, but that's from the perspective of really having an understanding. So in other words, what we see is the following. If merely just reading the words of Torah would bring you closer to Hashem, all the more understanding the words of Torah, how much more closer will that bring you to Hashem? As he points out, because Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, because Hashem through His kindness, He gave us Chibur along Chibur, because Baruch Hu composed the volume. The Torah is a composition from Hashem. The Torah composed the volume, Dvarim Kemoshe Gozo Chachmosoi. It's a volume based upon His wisdom. Umosram Lonu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu transmitted it to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu transmitted it to us. He gave us the Sefer that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that He composed. And that is, what's the Sefer that Hashem composed? The Hainu Klal Sefer Torah includes the whole of the Torah. The whole of the Torah, the Akraf, and after that comes Sefer HaNaviim, following the works of the prophets and so on. This is something that Hashem wrote a Sefer, wrote the Torah, and gave us that Torah. Of course, He dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it. This is Hashem's Sefer. Chatzka Levinstein was a Mashgiach of Ponovich. See, originally when he came from Shanghai, together with Yeshiva, with Amir Yeshiva, so a while he lived in Brooklyn, lived here in America. And a matter of fact, yes, he functioned, he was a Mashgiach in Europe still, he was a Mashgiach in Amir Yeshiva. Something in America just doesn't sit right with him, and he set his eyes to Eretz Yisrael. And he left America, Brooklyn, and he lived in Eretz Yisrael, and it became, of course, he was the Mashgiach, the Ponovich Rav took him to be the Mashgiach and to give the Musa Shmusen in the Yeshiva of Ponovich. And the Cheskel Levinstein was somebody who saw the hand of Hashem in everything, in every aspect. They said it was a particular time that they saw extreme joy on his face more than usual. And they went to ask him, Rebbe, why are you so happy about? He said, let me tell you something. He said, when I lived in Brooklyn, he says, the budget of the yeshiva was at a point that he could not raise the money. So whatever meager salary that I had, he says, was supposed to get, it never came on time. A week went by, 2 weeks, it varied. It never came on time. So I had to rely on the mid of bitochen, right? Yid has bitochen HaKadosh Baruch Hu. My parnasa, sooner or later, is going to arrive. I came to Eretz Yisrael, you know, the head of Ponovich was the Ponovich. Ponovich was the most successful fundraiser in the world. He was on the road all the time. It was tremendously matzliach. The check came always on time. He says, bitochen, the mid of bitochen, that a person has faith and trust in Hashem, it's like a muscle. If you don't use it, it gets weak. So now in Eretz Yisrael, he says, I had no need to rely on the mid of bitochen. Everything was handed out to me. Baruch Hashem, he says, the last few weeks the check didn't come. Now I need midas habitochen. That tremendous joy on his face. Tremendous joy on his face. Things didn't exactly go the way he wanted, but adrabah, that's now a chance to resort and to rely and to go back and work on the midas habitochen. Adam God like that, that's where he sees his joy. That was his joy, that was the simcha. So, here's the ma'aseh. So he had family that was here, Rabbi Ginsburg, as a matter of fact, you know, who's one of the goodest Israel, you know, one of the shuls in Flatbush in Coney Island. He's an Einikel, his mother was a daughter. So the family used to send from America certain appliances all the time. Yes, sir, nothing changed. So those days, they once sent him a toaster. I said, a toaster? He said, how do you operate this toaster? So he opens up the package and starts looking in, and he sees there's a little booklet the company sends along, you know, which is a set of instructions. And he jumps for joy. What's the joy? And he says, now I see Torah min haShemayim, clear proof that the Torah comes from heaven. The Torah comes from heaven, and he goes around, Torah min haShemayim, Torah min haShemayim. He said, Rebbe, where do you see in the booklet of a toaster that Torah is min haShemayim? He says, very simple, he says. A company, right, which are made up of people with simple, limited human minds. They understand that you don't send a toaster without connecting to it, right, a booklet of instructions. They understand you have to know how to operate it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends down mankind in a Neshama, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends down in a Neshama millions of miles from the upper world where the instructions are operated. There have to be instructions! If a human being understands you don't send a toaster without a book of instructions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends out a neshama millions of miles. How do we know how to operate in this world? There has to be a book of instructions. There has to be the Torah. Torah Neshamayim, he says. That's how Yid looks at things, common things that we see every day, and be able to take something out of it, something emusar, and bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So here we have it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Sefer that he composed. Yes, that Torah Neshamayim, he gave it to us as a gift. Shebizgulas HaDvarim Ohem. Right? That this gula means the inherent, right? The inherent powers of the words of Torah are such, Shemi Sheyehege Ben Bigdusha B'Tahara, that if you simply recite the words of Torah, but you do it with purity, and you do it with sanctity. In other words, when you learn Torah, you have to learn a pure Torah. For Torah to have an effect, you have to have a pure Torah. Listen, in the physical world, it's also like that. If a person is taking medicine, but his body is not conditioned to take the medicine. Some medicines you have to take with food, right? Others going to hurt you, right? Or if someone's going to take medicines, but then the doctor says you have to take medicine, but make sure that you don't catch cold, that you don't go outside in cold weather. So you're going to take medicines. I have medicine, so I can do whatever I want. Then you're going to feed the purpose. In other words, even to take medicine, but it demands a certain mode of behavior in order for the medicine to work. Each sickness has a different mode of behavior. Medicine alone is not going to do the trick if you don't behave properly to allow the medicine to work. The same thing, if you want the Torah to bring you closer to Hashem, then you have to be conditioned. You have to learn it with purity. You have to learn it with sanctity. Spiritual medicine is no different than physical medicine. The body, the neshama, in the physical area, have to be ready for it. So this is the school of Torah. This is the inherent capability of Torah. Contained in the words, Shemisha Yehegadem Mikdusha B'Tahara. That someone who recites the words of Torah with holiness and with purity, and he does it with the proper kavona, ala kavona hanachayne, with the proper intent. With the proper intent, when I learn Torah, I'm not just learning it for, I'm not just learning merely for mental stimulation, which the Torah provides to the greatest minds, but I'm learning it because this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do. So you're learning Torah with purity. You're doing it in order to fulfill the Ratzon Hashem. In order to fulfill, so it's not just intellectual stimulation, which is the greatest of all. So then, Yis'atzim boy al yodoy, al yodom. What means is now the Torah becomes integrated, he becomes a shtick Torah. In other words, when a person learns Torah and behaves accordingly, he's not just learning Torah. You become a shtick Torah. You become a piece of Torah. Yeah, you become literal. You become a sefer Torah. A living sefer Torah you become. A matter of fact, and this translates l'maisa, it's not just a nice word, as I'm saying, a nice figure of speech. Yeah, you become a living sefer Torah. Maisa shoya, in Volozhin, was on Simchas Torah. Bochonon told over that story. Bochonon Wasserman. So some of the story that the Nitziv was carrying the Sefer Torah and they were dancing. And something happened that the Nitziv slipped and he falls and the Sefer Torah falls. So everybody runs to pick up the Sefer Torah. So the son of the Nitziv cries out, "No," he says, "first to pick up the Nitziv. He's the living Sefer Torah. Then you pick up the other Sefer Torah." Maaseh Shoya. Can you imagine such a thing? Yes, a human being can elevate himself, that he becomes not just someone who learns Torah, you become a Sefer Torah. And it shouldn't be considered to be far-fetched. How can a human being, what kind of a Sefer Torah am I? So the Rabbeinu Mapshischa once explained it, he said very simply, we said it in the past, he said, what do you think a Sefer Torah is? Did you ever stop to think? Sefer Torah is, you took the hide of an animal. Yeah, that's all it is. To the hide of an animal, which at that point it's nothing. It's just a lowly animal. Oh, so what happened? You took some droplets of ink, and you wrote words of Torah on the hide of an animal, and all of a sudden, the hide of a simple lowly animal becomes now elevated to the greatest Kedusha, to the highest level of holiness. It becomes the Sefer Torah. It becomes transformed. What transformed the animal? Sefer Torah is the hide of an animal. How can an animal become a Sefer Torah? That's in the Koran Kodesh. Because some ink wrote words of Torah on the hide of an animal, has the ability to transform it completely from one end of the spectrum to the other, that becomes a Kedusha of Sefer Torah. So Rabbi Binim said, if an animal can become a Sefer Torah, a human being can't. Human being who lives Torah, who breathes Torah, who behaves like Torah, he's worth, and the animal has some ink of Torah on it. if an animal can become a Sefer Torah, whatever the reason, a human being certainly, who lives a living Sefer Torah, certainly can become a Sefer Torah. And that's what, actually, the words of Ramchal, you can see it. It's Atzem Boy. It becomes Atzem. It becomes part of him. Because part of him, he learns the Torah, it's Atzem Boy Al Yodom. Mayel El Yoyin El Shlomis, God Al Yoyin, who will reach a supreme elevation and extremely great perfection. That is the Koyach of Torah. That is the Koyach of Torah, what Koyach is able to do. As a matter of fact, there's another Sefer Ramchal, many, many Sforim of Ramchal. Some most people have never even heard of. One Sefer is called Adir Bamorim. Sefer is called Adir Bamorim, the Mighty One Most High. The Sefer Adir Bamorim Ramchal writes that when you go Hagbe, or when somebody goes Hagbe, when you lift up the Sefer Torah after the Kriyas HaTorah, he says, and someone goes and looks, which you see people, many have accustomed to go to have a look. Even a quick look. Have a look to see some of the letters. The look at the letters of the Torah during Hagbah also increases a person's level of sanctity. He becomes raised up by that also. So I have no idea that any connection, any attachment they have to Torah, certainly if you read it, certainly if you're learning it, but even just looking at the letters of the Torah also already adds to the level of the sanctity. So writes the Ramchal in the Sefer Adi Bamorim. So now he continues. V'chein. And so now, furthermore, if someone not merely reads the words of the Torah, but mishishtado bavanosom, someone who strives to understand it. Now, that's like we said, that's the second level. Someone who really strives to understand it, ubiyadias mashimosalom miperushayim, and to understand what the commentaries, right? What the perushim have added to it. Then, according to how deep, right? According to how deep and how much effort he expends. So it depends as to how much you start, how much koyach you put in. So the more koyach you put in, the more effort that you put in. So the element of effort, in addition also to the element of comprehension, all these things raise up the level, he says, of the perfection that you're going to be able to reach. And certainly, Ramchal, we know, was a great, right? It's a great proponent of Kabbalah. Ramchal says, more than anything, the study of Kabbalah will bring you even to the higher perfection. That's the Ramchal school of thought. That was his derech. That's his thing. That's why he says, culture gain. And certainly, he says, im yagia el haskola sisreyem verozeyem. In other words, an even higher level of perfection a person will reach, says Ramchal, if you achieve an understanding in the secrets and the mysteries, the inner secrets of the Torah, says Ramchal. As a matter of fact, Ramchal writes in another sefer called Kines Hashem Tzavokos. There's another sefer in Ramchal. And in that sefer, Ramchal writes that it's through the schus of studying the Torah Sanister, the Kabbalah, the esoteric part of Torah, it's in that schus that Hashem will ultimately bring quicker the Gula Shalema. As a matter of fact, there was reference to that in the Zohar Kodesh itself, Rav Shimon ben Yochai says, although Yufkin Megalusa, although the study of this, of the Zohar, of the Kabbalah, will bring you out of Golas quicker. In any case, Ramchal is pointing this out, that certainly this even will bring a person even closer to Hashem. And he says, Shekol Inyan Mehem Sheyaskil, any aspect of Torah, the bottom line in general, any aspect of Torah in general that a person studies, Yikva V'yis Atzeim Benishmosoi, this will establish, it becomes incorporated. The Torah that you learn becomes incorporated in your neshama. It changes your neshama. Madrege Ben Madreges, he says, from one level to the higher level, from one level to another level. Hayoyis Romois, the highest, Shebemaila Vashleimus Amiti, and to reach, them is to reach true perfection. Alright, so having said that a little bit, we see Ramchal telling himself of all the things that can bring you closer to Hashem, all the mitzvahs, every mitzvah that he said before. But greater than anything is the study of Torah. So let's take a little bit on the sheet to see a little bit to complement what Ramchal is saying over here. The first item that we have here is actually a halacha from the Shulchan Aruch Rav, that's the Balei Tanya. Shulchan Aruch Rav in Perek Beis of Hilchos Talmud Torah. Shulchan Aruch said there's a difference, he says, between when you learn Torah Shebiksav, right, which is Chumash or Tanakh, as opposed to learning Gemara. If you're learning Chumash or Tanakh, he says, even if a person, unfortunately, was not able to have an education and he does not understand the context, but merely saying the words, he says, is tremendous. But that's by Torah Shebikhtav. But the oral law, which is Torah Shebaalpeh, which is Gemara needs Havana, because that's Torah Shebaalpeh. However, even if you don't understand it, you don't lose completely. Let's take a look at the words of the Shulchan Aruch. This is halacha now. This is not hashkofa. This is a halacha with the Shulchan Aruch Rav writes in Perek Beis of Hilchos Talmud Torah. Let's take a look. It's halacha Yud Beis. First of all, the Shulchan Aruch Rav says, to have the highest level of the mitzvah, we're talking about now the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you should say the words. You know, when a person reads a newspaper, you read a book, you read it with your eyes, and that's fine, you read it with your eyes. But Shulchan Aruch Rav said, when we learn Torah, it's very important you should really say the words. To say the words, because that really is the main, this is really the main way of being mekayem the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Let's take a look. V'chol adam tzorech lehizor lehoitzi b'sfoso. You should bring out on his lips l'hashmi alei oznav kol ma shaloimei. Bein b'mikro, whether you're learning, right, Chumash, Mishneh, Talmud. Unless at the time when you're analyzing something, of course, you know, when somebody wants to write, when you're rethinking a svara, you're rethinking something, then he said, then go through your mind. But when you're learning from text, more appropriately, he says, say out the words. He's very machmer here. Shmuel says, yes, you gain the knowledge of Torah maybe without saying the words, but to get the real mitzvah of Talmud Torah, once you say the words. As he says, it says, v'lamadete moysom, u'kama shekosel posik says, lo yomush sefer Torah zemi picho, and so on. Then he says further, go down the last three lines. Achim moitzi b'sfosov, right here. If a person says the words of Torah, afal pi she'eino meivin. This goal of saying the words of Torah are so powerful. Just saying the words, even if you don't understand a word you're saying. Talking about Torah Shebikhtav now. Afal pi she'eino meivin afilu pirush amilus. We're not talking about deep understanding, you know. You don't understand the simple translation. Even if you don't understand the simple translation, mipnei shua amoris. Unfortunately, he's an amoris. He is not zeicher to have an education. If you say the words, you're mekayim the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Even though you didn't understand the word you're saying. As long as you're saying the words. And that's why, kol amoris, even somebody who's undereducated, mevarach birchas haTorah, he makes a bracha in the morning before he says psukim. Right? Or he has an aliyah. Why is he making a bracha if he doesn't understand the words? Unfortunately, somebody, right, who never learned anything. You're giving him an aliyah. So what? He doesn't understand anything. The answer is, the words of Torah are said or read, you have a mitzvah. You have a tremendous mitzvah, he says. And as we learned Ramchal, not only you have a mitzvah, but it sanctifies you. It's a mekadesh you. It means you're closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that is when, look at the next halacha, Sifur Gimel. Vamer Devorim Amurim, all of this is by Torah Shebikhtav. If you learn Chumash, you say the words, even if you don't understand. Avol Torah Shebaalpeh, im eina meivin hapirish, if you don't understand, simply, eina nechshiv limud. He brings it down for the Magen Avraham. Now, nevertheless, so here we just said, right, this is a little bit of an indictment. He says, if you're learning Torah Shebaalpeh, if you don't understand it, it's not called limud. So therefore, what does it mean? So let's say, if I'm not on the madrega, should I not learn? The afal pikein. Look what the Shulchan Aruch Rav, the Balatanya says. Afal pikein means, even if you don't really understand it. Yesh lo odon lasoik b'chol ha-toira gam b'dvorim shlayuch elohovim. Yehuda Rav says, if you learn Torah, and even though you're not able to understand it, what you gain is that in the next world, everything you learn on this world, you're going to understand it. When the time comes, and you go up to Shemaim, your neshama, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you Havana, you're going to have tremendous understanding. Why? Because on this world, you at least try to say the words, you try to understand it. So Shulchan Aruch Rav says, so a person should not hold back if he says, I don't understand it that much. In other words, there is something very positive that any area of Torah that you try to learn, even if you didn't understand it on this world, was it Lovoy, Yiske, Lohovin, Olahasi, Kola Torah, he'll be able to understand, and he will absorb the entire Torah, She'osek Ba'boi Lamazeh. he says. And he was not able to be masik, was not able to comprehend it, mekoytza data. His mind was limited on this world. But everything that you try to learn on this world, to the end of the day, you understand. Actually, Rav Palm said this many, many years ago at a particular Sima Shas. So many people, you know, who learn Daf Yomi, some do, some don't, some, you don't have to learn Daf Yomi. Anything until you learn is fine, as long as you learn, whatever you learn, everything. However, one of the things that some people, and it is true on this side, that the problem with the Daf Yomi learning is that you don't retain much, unless you chazer it. Most people don't have time to review, so they learn it. And also sometimes, you know, if you try in an hour to finish the whole daf, so many times there are many areas that they just skip over. People are listening. Yeah, the Magishir knows it. The people are sitting and listening, so there's certain parts of it that they didn't manage to understand. I mean, they heard it. So Rapam said, but in the next world you're going to understand it. Every blood gemara that you sat by your shir, he said. And you said to yourself, oh, I sat here and I didn't understand. Guess what? It's not lost. Maybe you didn't understand it now, but when it counts in the next world, he says, everything that you thought you didn't understand in this world, you're going to understand it. So actually, so this is an investment, and it's necessary because you're going to get that much more. Because if you do understand in this world, how much can we understand? The human mind is limited. But the avonah that you're going to get in the next world is going to be at a much, much higher level. So if you didn't understand really hardly anything of this world, but any effort that you put in the entire of this world, it'll be rewarded that you will have the avonah, you will have the avonah in the next world. Now, here we have, this is a classic of Rabbi Chanan. As a matter of fact, it was a couple of months away, and I mentioned this word of Rabbi Chanan. It was one of the largest drushes ever gave. It was in front of 20,000 people. Anyway, so I mentioned this Rabbi Chanan. So here you have it. Vayovik Yishima Yad Alois HaShachar. Here we have the thing. What happens is Yaakov Avinu, right in Pasuk Yishlach. He's afraid of the encounter with Esav. And we have the whole thing. Yaakov Avinu is preparing to meet Esav. In the meantime, we find the story is that Yaakov, you know, his family went ahead. He went back to retrieve Pachim Ketanim. He forgot some pictures there. The point is, he was alone. Vayivoso Yaakov Lovadoi. Yaakov looked alone. All of a sudden, Vayovik Yishimoi, there was someone who comes and attacks him. And we find out from Rashi Chazal, it was not a human being. It was a Malach. It was the Sar Shel Esav. In other words, came the Malach, Yankovina is wrestling with an angel, is wrestling with a Malach. And Malach is on the opposite side. Yankovina is on the side of Kedusha, and that Malach was on the side of Esav. As a matter of fact, it was the Sar Shel Esav. By Yovik Yishimoy, this is an obvious question. There were three of us. Yankovina was the third. Avraham Avinu, big tzaddik, right? Yitzchak, big tzaddik, Yaakovinu. Why did the Sar Shel Esav, why did the Malach wait to fight with Yaakovinu? Why did he start up with Avraham Avinu? Why did he start up with Yitzchak? Kasha Chofetz Chaim after Kasha. Why did he wait to the third of the Yom? Why went to Yaakovinu? Avraham Avinu is Kedusha. Yitzchak is Kedusha. Avraham Avinu threatens the Sar Shel Esav. Yitzchak. Why Dafke Yaakov? Why did the Sar Shel Esav feel that he's being threatened by Yaakov Avinu more than Avraham Avinu? Why does he wait? Why does he wait to Yaakov? Why did he start a fight? Why did he pick a fight with Avraham Avinu? Let's take a look here. Bachonim. The Tzorach Lohavin. This is in Sefer Koivis Mamorim. Classical essays from Bachonim Wasserman. The Tzorach Lohavin, Bavashi Kosa, with the prophet says, Vayovik Ishimoy. Who is that Ish? By the way, the Torah says Ish. Someone might think it's just a man. The Ishu Samuel. That's the name of the Malach. Kipesh Rashi Shom. That was the name, by the way. That's the name of the Sultan. Samach Mem Malach Lamed. In the Sifek Chasidus, in the Sifek Kabbalah, there's a lot written about the combination of these letters. Samach Mem Aleph Lamed. That represents, right, the shame of the Sar Shel Esav. In any case, the question is, the Loma Himtin, why did this Malach wait Melil Choy Mad Yaakov? Why did he wait to Yaakovinu? Shoy Kva Chutam Shur. He's already the third. He's already the third one. Hoy Loy Lil Choy Mad Avram. He should have started the fight with Avram. Look what Rabbi Chanan says. The time hadover near, I'll explain it to you. Because you shnei tzedodim loichmen. Bachon talks about, imagine if you have two countries that are at war with each other. Two countries that are at war. Afilu im yilet zad echon nisokim al chaveroi. Even if one side happens to be victorious, he says, but the war is not over. Why? Because it could be tomorrow, right, the loser, right, they're going to rebuild themselves, right, and get more ammunition, and then they're going to fight back. Who knows? We see many times. this country wins, loses, then the table's turned. The country that was a loser now becomes a winner, and the other becomes a loser. So the truth is, when you have countries that are fighting and one wins, the Melchom is not over yet. It could be that today this one is going to be victorious. Tomorrow another one will be victorious. However, if country number one not merely overpowers country number two, it takes away, it attacks its ammunition source. It takes its ammunition source and deprives them of ammunition, they know it's over. Because they haven't got with what to fight anymore. In other words, you have to zero in. It's not enough just to fight the other side. The ultimate is to try to destroy, try to find out where the source, where they keep the ammunition. Bomb that place, then they haven't got with to come back again. Let's take a look. So he says, so that would be the strategy. But if one was successful, right? Someone successful to be able to grab away the ammunition that the other side had, and the other was left without ammunition, the war is over. As long as both sides have ammunition, you won today, but tomorrow, yeah, you have people fighting swords and so on. You won today, tomorrow I fight. And so on. However, you take away the ammunition, he has no way to fight anymore. So Rabbi Chana said the same thing is with the Mochama of the Yetzer Hara. Even if you succeed to overpower Yetzer Hara, you didn't win yet. Because the Yetzer Hara doesn't sit back. He attacks you again tomorrow. Tomorrow he's going to win. Tomorrow he's going to win. So it keeps going back and forth. Today I was able to overpower my Yetzer Hara. I did not succumb to the Yetzer Hara. Does that mean I won? Didn't win. It's just today. Tomorrow's another day. Tomorrow the Yetzer Hara comes back again. Maybe with more strength, with more vigor. So what's the answer to fight the Yetzer Hara? To take away his ammunition. If you take away the ammunition of the Yetzer Hara, then you won the war. What does the Yetzer Hara try to do? The Yetzer Hara is also just as smart. When he tries to fight a Yid, he's not trying to say, eat chazer, eat this or that. Yetzer Hara tries to take away your ammunition to fight him. The only ammunition that a Yid has against the Yetzer Hara is Torah. Because Chazal say, Kedushin Daflamet Barosa Yetzer Hara, I created the Torah as the antidote to the Yetzer. So the Torah is the antidote to the Yetzer. So the Yetzer knows that I don't care how many mitzvahs you do, as you'll soon see. As long as I can succeed, that a Yid does not learn Torah, Yid does not have the shear, whatever it is, you're not connected to Torah, then the Yetzer knows it's successful. So Meila says Rabbi Chonon very beautifully. Let's take a look over here. The dogma zeh, he said, b'mechemes ha-yetzer. The same thing here with Mochama de Yetzer Hara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu heid. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was made, HaKadosh Baruch Hu testified. The only Yetzer, true Yetzer, against the Yetzer Hara is the Torah. But also Yetzer Hara, I, says the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I created the Yetzer Hara, so I know what works against him. But also the Torah Tavon, I created also the Torah that's the antidote. The Shum Klezayin Achar Lo Yitzlach Neged HaYetzer Hara. There's no other ammunition that succeeds against the Yetzer Hara. Rak Limud HaTorah, Kama Sheheruch Bozeh B'Mesilas Yesharim. Ramchal again. Ramchal writes as follows in Mesilas Yesharim. Who is the biggest maven on an item? Who's the biggest maven on a watch? You know who? Well, you have a lot of watchmakers, but who's the biggest maven? The biggest maven is the one who invented the watch. The one who invented the watch, he knows, right, all the how it works exactly. He knows exactly what the every screw. The one who, nobody can be a bigger maven than the one who invented it. Who is the biggest maven race on an automobile, on a car? Is the one who invented it. And if someone says, I know a new way, what do you mean? I invented it. I know this is going to work, this is not going to work. You can't argue with him. Says Ramchal, because Bogu said, I created the Yetzer Hara. So who's the biggest maven on the Yetzer Hara? I, Boros the Yetzer Hara. And I say only the Torah works against him. Who is you to say otherwise? Boros the Yetzer Hara. I created the Yetzer Hara. I invented the Yetzer Hara. And I also created the Torah to be the tablet to that. So I'm going to go further. Tim Kane, Kishi Yisrael Hem Betelem Elimad HaTorah. If Yidin are not studying Torah, Ovdu HaKlei Zayin Shalem. They lost the Klezayin, the Ein Lohem, B'mah Lulcham HaYetzer. They haven't got with what to fight the Yetzer Hara. Masha Ein Kenim Nichshul B'Shar Avoinis. However, if Yidin, let's say, even if you happen to slip by any other Avera, Apila Yoyser Chamulim, even if a Yid was over, right, the greatest Averis, It's not lost yet. Why? Because there still is hope. There still is a Torah in the world. You can come back. You can do tshuva. The greatest avera that you do doesn't have to destroy. Doesn't have to destroy you. There still is hope. And that's Nichlal. Chazal said, the light of Torah, the light of Torah brings you back. So the Yetzirah therefore knows the only way to really succeed is by destroying that a Yid should b'chol not learn Torah. That's it. You know, I don't care how many times a day you daven, go ahead, daven. I don't care how much tzedakah you do, that's okay. But the ammunition against me is Torah. So therefore the Yetzirah mischazek u'misames, he puts all his efforts, levatel melimud haTorah, yoytzei mikol hamitzvos. Look what Rabbi Chanan writes about his Rebbe, the Chofetz Chaim. V'chein shomati, I heard mipe kodosh Rabbeinu Baal Chofetz Chaim. It was shlita when he wrote it, and then was reprinted. What's that zatzal? Because when Rabbi Chanan wrote it, Chofetz Chaim was still alive. So you see shlita, and then the word zatzal. Chofetz Chaim said, we'll say it in Yiddish, and we'll translate it. Chofetz Chaim hat azoy gezugt. The Yetzirah atnisht. The Yetzirah does not bother. Ayid zol fasten and weinen in daven and a ganzen tug abinisht lernen. Hear that? B'chon HaSeh, Chofetz Chaim said, the Yetzirah is not bothered. You can daven all day. Go ahead, I'll even push it to daven. You can fast, he says, 7 days a week. I don't care, he says. I long to not to learn. Because why? Because the Yetzirah knows what really destroys him. That is the radiation that destroys the cells of the Yetzirah. That's Torah. Is the rays of Torah. Is that radiation. That's got to zap the Yetzirah. Is with the Koyach of Torah, he said. So look what he said in Russian Kurdish. Now, so let's go back to answer the question. Avraham Avinu, what was his avodah? Avraham Avinu was the amoda chesed. He was the pillar of chesed. Avraham Avinu, we know chesed. Achvas asarchem, bringing in the guests, right? Everything. Avraham Avinu was the pillar of chesed. Yitzchak was the pillar of avodah. He stretched out his neck to be a carbon, to be a sacrifice for Hashem. The highest level of avodah. Yaakov Avinu was Torah. Yaakov Yishtam Yoshev Aholim. Titan Emesla Yaakov. The Yitzchak doesn't pick on Avram. Do all the chesed you want. Yitzchak doesn't pick on Yitzchak. Do all the avodah you want. Yaakov, Libra Torah. That's what the Yetzirah said. Vayyovik Yishimoy. That's why the Yetzirah comes. To whom does he come? He comes against Yaakov Avinu. Avraham Avinu was Amoda Chesed. Yitzchak was Amoda Avodah. Yaakov was Amoda Torah. Now came therefore Mikulon lo Yisam Yisrael. Yisrael is not bothered by all the others. Kol Kach Levatlon. He's not bothered that much to destroy them. Kemoy B'Yaakov. Ki Zeh Simen Lebonim. This is now a simen for our generation, to the descendants of Yaakov Avinu. Just like then, Yisrael today also. Yisrael puts in the most koiches. You should not be studying Torah, not learning Torah. Shekol ishtavos ha-yetzahar, we see from Yaakov, because that's a sin into all generations. Whatever happened to Yaakov, right? Whatever to Yaakov, remember, Maisa ovi simil abonim. What does it mean? How do you translate that? A lot of translations, but the best translation is, whatever happened to Yaakov is a pre-enactment of what is going to happen in later generations. Maisa ovi simil abonim. Whatever happened to the Yoloys is a pre-enactment. What happened to Yaakovina, who is attacked because of his limit of Torah, that's a pre-enactment of today. That's what the Yisrael keeps doing. L'hach shul es Yisrael be'bikla Torah. So that is the word Rabbi say. That is the Yisrael. And that's what Ramchal tells us. Every mitzvah has tremendous power. Every mitzvah brings us closer and closer to Hashem. But the highest method, above all the methods, it can bring us closer to Hashem. And it's more powerful than anything, and that is the study of Torah. Okay. Thank you.